Shut up and sit down.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of the Jack and Jill Show. We got a pretty loaded episode today. We're going to be joined by Jeremy Snow. We'll be talking a little bit of baseball again. Again, Jeremy's our head baseball coach here at Northland College. Thanks for joining us once again. Thanks for coming on and talking to us about baseball. Obviously, big week for baseball. We can say that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Becoming the resident baseball expert. So this is great.
It's needed. It's needed. As me and Mike have admittedly said, we have not been, our viewing numbers in our households have not been as high as
I will say next year. I'm going to make it an effort to watch baseball. I'll make that promise.
Me too. Honestly, I used to like really get into the playoffs because some of the managerial decisions, the management, like you're watching starting pitchers come in relief at times. Like I remember, I think it was the Diamondbacks were in one World Series when I was a kid, and I might get the order of this wrong, but I think it was Randy Johnson closed after Curt Schilling pitched the first 8 innings. Am I saying that right? That happened, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely piggybacked each other a couple times in that playoffs, and that's why they were co World Series MVPs.
Yeah. So you get this cool stuff in the playoffs that just doesn't happen in the regular season for baseball. And then speaking of management, I mean, two big controversies in baseball in the World Series. Well, two that I'm aware of. One is public health related. The other is managing. So, Jeremy, let's talk the managing decision first that happened in the final game. You're a coach. Educate the viewers on what happened here.
Well, Tampa Bay is a very analytics and data-driven decision-making organization. That's what they've done all year, played matchups, played numbers on spreadsheets and all that stuff. The money ball aspect, if you want to call it that. But that's the way they've gone all year. Snell hadn't gone more than 6 innings all year. He's never thrown a complete game in his career, and it's always been a matchup-based decision. And they made that decision again in the World Series from the common fan or even just the baseball fan in general. Snell was dominating that game, and he reached the top of the lineup for the third time with a runner on base. 1-2-3 in the lineup for the Dodgers was 0-for-6 with 6 strikeouts. So it didn't look good to pull him at that point.
Looked terrible.
Yeah.
From a very outsider standpoint of where I sit.
For sure. Terrible. For sure. But, It's hard to just chastise Kevin Cash for that decision. That's the type of decisions that they had made all year that got them to where they're at. And reality is they're a $28 million payroll, and Mookie Betts in a normal year would have made $27 million this year by himself for the Dodgers. So they've made those decisions based on the payroll gap and trying to outsmart everybody. And
you said Snell hadn't gone more than 6 innings all year?
Correct.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that. That's been left out.
Yeah, 108 career starts for Snell, and he's never thrown a complete game. So it's one of those things. They didn't want him to face the lineup the third time. Kevin Cash didn't do himself any favors in the post game, saying that it wasn't planned or scripted. But in all reality, they pulled him because they didn't want him to face the lineup for a third time, and they had a 1-run lead. The offense wasn't going to done on the hitter side for Tampa Bay, but to bring in that reliever who had been struggling in the World Series is probably the worst part of that decision to me. Just knowing how they manage and how they operate, the decision to pull Snell wasn't the issue for me. It was who they brought in after that. And as a Dodger fan, it was relieving to see Snell come out of the game after dominating as much as he had.
And that's what Dave Roberts said, the Dodgers manager. Like, is Roberts taking cheap shots here at Cash? I mean, he very easily could have made comments like, you know, it's his decision, it's what they've done all year. Instead, here's one of his quotes. This is when he was pulled. That was the question that was posed to him. I was pretty happy because he was dominating us and we just weren't seeing him. We were all kind of excited that Snell was out of the game.
But I think that's...
Oh, it's definitely honest, but yeah. Isn't there like a fraternity in the managing world?
Yeah, you know,
it's a little salt on the wound here.
It is a little salt on the wound, but you could see it on the players' faces right when Snell got pulled. The dugout was a little excited because he was virtually unhittable that game. I think he had given up just two hits in that game. But going back to Kevin Cash's side of it, Snell no-hit the Dodgers for four innings, maybe five, in the first start that he had in the World Series, and facing the lineup the third time, gave up a couple runs and got pulled. So knowing that they only had the one-run lead and going off of the history of just the last start, the decision doesn't look as horrible. I just, from the watching that game and the feeling and the feel you have to have in a game like that, it was not good.
Yeah, and obviously Snell's saying like he wanted to stay in. Those quotes are, to me, irrelevant. Every pitcher wants to stay in that situation.
For sure.
And I think that brings up a good point, too. Like, there has to be some feeling out. Well, like, obviously, we talked about how much the Rays were into analytics, but doesn't, on the flip side of that, there has to be a feeling out process of, like, what's transpiring in the game, too, right?
Yeah, well,
what gets me is the 0 for 6 with 6 strikeouts. Like, that's not just 0 for 6. That's, like, that's 0 for 6 where you're not hitting the ball. Like, you're not, like, if it was 0 for 6 and, like, guys were making catches on the warning track, it'd be like, oh, boys, next one might get away from us here.
Yeah, but the unfortunate part about analytics is you're playing the law of averages. And Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, Justin Turner were the top three hitters in that lineup. We're all hitting over 300 in the series. Corey Seager was the championship series MVP, eventually the MVP of the World Series. Hard to say on the law of averages that they were going to get him to go over again. But that's the gamble you play with analytics. And the one thing about it for Kevin Cash is that you're playing those decisions based on the numbers, and the numbers are dictating the decision. There is no emotion in there. There is no field. There's what the paper and the stats are telling you to do. And that's the hard part about it, is you're going to have to live and die with that decision-making process if that's what you're doing. And unfortunately, he came out on the wrong end of it. But it could have very easily been, we left Snell in, he gives up a two-run right. homer on the next pitch. And now they say, well, you should have stuck with the numbers because that's what you guys do. Yeah.
And that's what got you.
That's true.
It's all hindsight. And I think that's the gut reaction of most fans is, man, it didn't look good because the result didn't end up right. Had Anderson come into the game, got those next two hitters out, ended the inning with a one-run lead, and got to the next guy in the bullpen, who's to say they wouldn't have won the game? And then that decision was like, wow, that was a questionable decision, but man, you're a really smart manager. So I think that's the hardest part about managing the playoffs, is every decision you make in any sport is going to be questioned, whether it's good or bad. I think I said it to a coaching friend of mine that morning. I don't envy either manager in a game six like that. You know, yes, the Dodgers had it tomorrow, so it is what it is. But they started a rookie who had been struggling in the playoffs, and they went with a bullpen game. And that could have played out very horribly for them. When to pull somebody, when not to pull somebody. And the Rays were playing for their lives, and unfortunately it didn't work out.
Yeah. So let's talk about the other thing that happened in this game. And this is just, I've been reading the headlines. You know, I first saw it on like social media, and I was kind of like, that can't be right. Like, and I'm of course talking about Justin Turner here.
Yeah.
What? So let me get this straight. He found out mid game that he had tested positive for COVID.
Yeah. It wasn't shared that way when it happened. Like, he got pulled from the game. You know, being a big Dodger fan and really invested in the game, I saw him come out, and one of our rookie third basemen came into the game, and it, we had the lead, but it wasn't necessarily like a put away lead necessarily. So it was a very shocking thing, because Turner's the unspoken leader of that clubhouse. But yeah, to find out after the game, in the post game, that he was removed for a positive test that occurred before the game was really interesting.
Did his teammates know he tested positive
at that moment? I'm not sure how.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think he just got pulled from the dugout, and then put into what they said was an isolation. But I'm sure you're going to ask about what happened next.
Yeah. So here, obviously, we just talked about the Dodgers winning. And as Jeremy pointed out, he got put in isolation for the rest of the game. The game ended, the Dodgers won, and he's out on the field celebrating with his teammates. And there's pictures of him standing shoulder to shoulder with his teammates with no masks on either.
Yeah, so the timeline from what I saw, he was not on the field for the initial celebration. It wasn't until they had cleared out, brought the podium out to talk about the team and then start taking the pictures that he came back out. I think in between there, he sent out a tweet about not being able to celebrate with the guys. And then the picture started surfacing that he was out on the field, but there was a gap in there. So where it was only the Dodgers. So he was only out there with people that he had already exposed while playing the game, in the same dugout. So I'll defend him a little bit, but yeah, not good. Definitely not good from a health standpoint. And I don't know what MLB is going to do about it.
But what is the appropriate punishment for this? I mean,
that's the thing. The season's over.
Yeah. And Turner's now a free agent. I mean, I guess, do we know like how he ended up with a positive test mid game?
The timeline that I read the next day, because the initial timeline that was tweeted out very quickly turned out to be wrong and they had to make an adjustment. But the way it went, I guess he got an inconclusive test in the initial test on that day. He took another test and didn't have the results once the game started. And I think that's where the biggest question mark is if he didn't have a conclusive test by the start of the game, why was he allowed to play in the game?
I would agree.
But he didn't have a conclusive test and therefore played the game. They got part the results. What's that?
Part of the game.
Yeah, part of the game till the eighth inning. So it was quite a bit of the game. They found the results, and then according to everything that's been reported, the chain of notification happened rather quickly, and they pulled him from the game immediately at that point. But it looked really odd from watching the game because nothing was said. He hit a deep fly ball to the warning track that off the bat, I think a lot of people thought was a home run, including himself, just looking at his reaction. And then went back in the dugout and then never came back.
So, I mean, what should the MLB do with a situation? Like, I don't think we've seen something like this in all of this yet,
Think we're going to see the consequences of this for a couple weeks or at least the rest of this week as they test the Rays players, the Dodgers mm-hmm. players, because they weren't supposed to release them back to their homes until the testing came back because they've all been exposed to a positive case. So they all had to go and get retested the next day. I haven't seen any of the results from that. But a couple of the other issues that I've seen pop up from this, Trevor Bauer tweeted about it either that night or the next day. Talking about how he was removed from the game, nothing was said, and then instantly reports, and I'm saying that with air quotes, were surfacing that it was COVID-related and that he had received a positive test. And I think that brings into a lot of question about players and their health privacy rights and things like that. So, and he brought that up about HIPAA and all that stuff. So
it's actually a good point. Can you imagine if that's how his family found out?
Right.
Someone tweeting something or someone leaking a report.
I think that's what his point was.
Yeah.
Sidebar. I'd love to get Trevor Bauer on this podcast.
yeah. I think
we would have so much fun.
Yeah. He is quite a character and just a fun person to follow on social media for sure. But he challenges a lot of conventional and old school baseball mindset. So,
yeah. I just want to add one. A little bit of my opinion on the whole thing. And I saw someone kind of defended Turner and was like, well, he was already in contact with all those people anyways when he came back out on the field and wasn't wearing a mask. Well, I find that difficult to believe. Yes, maybe teammates, but let's be real. In a MLB stadium, it's not just that team out there. And I realize it's a celebration. They'd cleared a lot of people out. There's still some like security staff there, photographers, reporters. Sure. There are people that he had not come in contact with that he put in risk.
For sure.
And that to me is, I get it. I mean, I guess I don't because I don't know what it's like to win a World Series, but I don't know. I find it really, really, really selfish And my personal opinion is I hope the MLB actually comes down pretty hard on this.
Yeah. The quote in the article about it on ESPN was that he emphatically denied the security from keeping him in the isolation, wanted to go celebrate. And I agree with you. It's definitely selfish to want to celebrate what you just did, knowing that you have a positive COVID test and you're risking a lot of other people, because the families were out there, right? So
yeah,
it's a lot of other people that you weren't directly in contact with.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Jeremy, I appreciate you stopping down, talking a little bit of baseball with us. And I guess congratulations are in order. You said you're a Dodgers fan. So
yeah, it's been an up and down road being a Dodger fan my whole life. But we
try being a Brewers fan.
It's just been a down road for you over there, Mike. Yeah. A down road.
I don't have a response to that.
Well, Jeremy, appreciate you coming on here. Again, I'm sure we'll talk more. Me and Mike have both said we will put a greater emphasis on our baseball viewership next year. I'm actually hoping to go over to Milwaukee next season and catch a game. It's one of the stadiums I haven't been to. So here's to hoping fans will be at stadiums when that time comes. But Jeremy, again, thanks for coming on. All right, moving away from baseball now. We talk about this every week right now because it's football season. There's no way around it. Packers doing well again. You got anything you want to say? Gloat, whatever.
No, they're back. I mean, obviously that, like we talked, obviously a tough, really tough loss to the Buccaneers, but Rodgers was. He was criticized big time by the media going into last week.
You guys don't even know what
and
media criticism is out here. Come to New England. Check out the Boston talk shows and what.
But
you find what criticism.
You look on ESPN and it's like, oh, like Rodgers doesn't have it anymore. And it's like he's got 15 touchdowns and like 2 interceptions this year. Like he's still got it.
Oh yeah, he's still got
but,
it.
But yeah, big win Texans. I mean, they have a ways to go. Like I feel sorry for Deshaun Watson.
Same.
He's obviously, I believe he's one of the top tier quarterbacks in the NFL. And
I think he can be. I don't know.
No, that's a good point. He's top 10. He's a top 10 quarterback.
Yeah.
But yeah, big one coming up this weekend against the Vikings, who are, when you look at the schedule at the start of the year, you're like, okay, like middle of the year, these two teams are going to be. 4-2, Packers are 5-1, but Vikings are 1-5. So you have a 5-1 Packers versus the 1-5 Vikings.
What do Packers fans get more amped for? Games against the Vikings or games against the Bears?
If you're a younger person, it's Vikings because they've obviously been competitive for in my lifetime anyways. They've been around it. If you're talking to my mom or dad, who's my mom's the biggest diehard Packers fan. It's awesome. But I would say probably Bears for like the older.
It's a generational thing. Yeah, that makes sense. For those that aren't aware, the Patriots just wow. That big sigh you just gave out is it's amazing how quickly things have changed in New England. I thought after the first 3 games, I'm like, we're going to win 10 games this year. I think I thought 11, to be honest. So is it going to be another 11-5 year? Like Bill's going to find a way to make this work. Cam looks dangerous. Our quarterback performance since end of week 3 has been just dreadful. The defense.
I was going to say, it's not just Cam Newton.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
Against San Francisco, that was hard to watch, really hard to watch. And then, obviously, week prior to that, losing to Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos, who are nothing spectacular whatsoever.
The 49ers were having their way with our defense. There was nothing we did that worked. Offensively and defensively.
This is kind of weird hearing you talk like this about your Patriots.
We got waxed. That was the last time I felt the way I felt on Sunday was, I'm trying to make sure I get the year right.
It's like 94.
No, it was 2009. 2010. And we played the Jets in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And we had just murdered the Jets in the regular season. Like, it was so bad. It was one of those Rex Ryan, Matt Sanchez years where we just knew like this was going to be another game where it was just going to be a joke. And this game was over at halftime. Like, the Jets crushed us, outplayed us. Everything we did was wrong. Fumbles, interceptions. It was like
hashtag butt fumble.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. But the emotion I felt that night watching the Jets knock us out of the playoffs was the closest. Again, that was 2010. I believe 2010. It's 2020. Like, I haven't felt the way I felt last Sunday in a long time.
So we've talked about in previous podcast or episodes about some teams burning it down, rebuilding. Is this?
I don't know.
Is it too soon?
I think it's too soon. That? I think it's too soon.
This weekend's obviously a huge week. If they win this weekend, which I do think it's going to be a very close game. Probably more than people think, because the Bills aren't playing well this like the last two or three weeks either. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
I mean, the Boston media is all over Cam right now, which I think is unfair. I think there's still time to right this ship. We're 2-4 right now. I think we need to bring in another weapon offensively. And we also, in terms of long term, we have the league high in opt outs this year. Like, our defense mm-hmm. is...
Oh, that's true.
A huge... I mean, Dante Hightower, like, the teeth of our defense, the spine, part of it's missing right now.
I listened to... It was a different podcast, but they made a great point of this. I've never... Like, I've known about, like, how the Patriots, like, how they go after, like, just your regular Joe guys, but, like, who on the Patriots offense, if you're a defender, like... There's not one guy that scares you. We got to double team this guy. We got to, there's not, they don't have that.
Our right biggest now. Weapon is a 34-year-old Julian Edelman.
Right.
32, 34, one of those two. Like, that's not, and I love Julian Edelman. I got his jersey. Like, I'm one of his biggest fans. I love his story. Kent State, one of the biggest mm-hmm. competitors there is.
Quarterback, right?
Yeah, he was a quarterback at Kent State. Fun. This is how competitive Julian Edelman was. He walked into the Kent State campus. You see how short it is. Kent State had a transfer quarterback from Baylor, expected to be the number one. And the guy was working on his and the guy was punting. Like, this is a transfer from Baylor. Like, he was and Julian Edelman walked in. I was like, what are you doing, man? This was the first day of training. And the guy's like, oh, I'm working on my pooch kicks. And Julian Edelman's like, this is what he said to him. All right, well, that's all you'll need to do this year. And then walked away. And then there's another story where Julian Edelman, this is practice, overthrew one of his teammates. And the ball bounced off the turf. It was a deep ball. And he just takes off, sprints down the field. And the next thing you know, he's flying through the air. And he has tackled the guy. And he is... hitting him, this is not the most flattering story, because the guy didn't dive for the ball. Like, and you can, if you want, anyone wants to do some reading on it, you can just Google it. There's Patriots players talk about it all the time. This guy's feisty, a fierce competitor, but he ain't 25 anymore.
No, like, he's not.
We need another offensive weapon to really give Cam a chance, I think. And I feel like we got away with some stuff the first 3 weeks. It was new. People weren't quite sure what we were going to do. I mean, I don't think anyone's afraid to play the Patriots right now.
But on the flip side of that too, is I think McDaniels has to, he needs to use Cam more to his strengths.
Agreed.
Which he's, I don't know if he's getting away from that or, but like, yeah, like you said, like the first 3 weeks you're like, holy cow, like look at Cam doing here. Like, he's back. Like, he looked like a great fit. And then where's that been? Like, the last three games?
Well, my guess would be teams just they're selling out here to stop Cam at the line of scrimmage, to not mm-hmm. let. I mean, I think he had three rushing touchdowns in one game. I think, or he had three through the first two games. Like, that just ain't happening anymore. Like, teams are gonna say, like, you have to actually be able to move the ball through the air,
right.
And we can't right now. It's terrible. I can't. I would not want to be in a Bill Belichick film session right now. I would be scared for my life. Because the amount of turnovers we have, and if you're around New England, you know how Bill Belichick talks about turnovers. I think in the last 3 weeks, we've had more than we had all last year or something. Like,
It's been a lot.
It's just been incredible. It's not, I mean, we knew it was going to be an adjustment to any New England fans out there. I don't think it's time to hit the panic button yet.
Not yet.
It's a weird year. We're 2-4. I know we've been spoiled for the last 2 decades, but let's remember what Bill Belichick built. Let's remember what the New England Patriots built. Like, there's time. Like, let's but not.
It starts this weekend. Like, if they lose this weekend, it's over.
Yeah, if we lose this weekend, we're spiraling. And
but you still, like, if they win, they can, you know, you got the Jets, you got the, who are not good. You have a Dolphins team who is, like, they're, who's off to an okay start, but now they're throwing in their rookie quarterback. So, like, who knows what the Dolphins are going to be about?
How do you feel? Did we talk about that last week?
No.
How do you feel about that?
I don't agree with it at all.
I don't either. Fitzpatrick was winning. He was top 5 in a couple stats, a top 10 in a ton of stats.
They clearly think, obviously, they were waiting for Tua to get healthy, but they, through practice, and this is why I'm not a head coach of the Miami Dolphins, but this is why they think, you know, they feel that Tua is going to give them the best opportunity to win, obviously.
Yeah. I was shocked. I mean, shocked's the wrong word. I mean, it's your number one draft pick. It's the guy you want to be the future. But, you know, you're in a playoff battle right now.
Like, they're in the thick of it hard right now.
You're winning football games, which you haven't done in a long time. And then to make this dramatic switch, like, it just seemed really unnecessary. Like, you're putting a lot of unneeded pressure on, A, your rookie quarterback, and, B, your coaching staff. Because now if you don't win, no matter what, everyone's going to say, well, you know, you were in the thick of it until you made this move. Like, things have to go right here. Otherwise, you look like you made the wrong decision.
I'd be curious to see, like, how the players feel about this as well. Because this is, you know, Fitzpatrick, he's obviously, I don't know how many teams he's played on. Is it 10?
I think it's more.
But, you know, he's obviously a big glue guy. And he's been having one of his better years. And, you know, I think it was a Thursday night game a couple weeks ago. Like, he's out there, like, running around the field. Like, he's, I don't know. The Dolphins are.
Fitzpatrick didn't deserve this. Like, this was just.
He didn't. And I was glad in his press conference afterwards saying, like, how, like, he didn't see it coming at all and was obviously upset about it, too. I was glad he said that. But, I mean, obviously, he's gonna be a good mentor for Tua moving forward.
He's played on 8 teams.
I knew it was up there.
Yeah, I had to look it up. That's just, I thought it was in double digits too, though. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm rooting for Brian Flores because I want a Patriots assistant to be successful just once. But gutsy call. A last thing on the NFL here before we go to our picks. Down in Tampa, Antonio Brown is back. Right off the bat, a little disappointed that this happened. I guess I haven't been quite on up to date in some of Antonio Brown's legal battles, but my gut instinct was I did not think a team was ever going to sign this man again.
Well, I don't think any of that's come out yet, but the Bucks came out saying, like, if he's guilty, like, he's gone or something like that. I believe it was. But yeah, I mean, Brady and they got one game together last year. We'll see if they
dangerous.
We'll see if they even make it one game this year. I mean, I think it was a week 8. I think he's eligible to come back. So yeah, I mean, a lot of weapons there. You know, you have Godwin, Evans, Gronk, who's been looking
better, like better
his old self.
Yeah.
Fournette, Ronald Jones, the defense is looking like one of the better defenses in the NFC, if not the NFL right now. So, yeah, it's going to be if Brown can get back to where he was, like with the Steelers, it's game over. You might as well give the Buccaneers the ring now. But nobody's going to be able to stop that offense.
Who ends the year with more touchdowns? Antonio Brown or Dez Bryant?
I forgot about Dez Bryant signing with the Ravens. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go Antonio Brown. But
yeah. Plus, I think Dez Bryant's only on the practice squad right now.
He's not.
You can't keep him on the practice squad, can you?
No. I'm so surprised it took him this long to get on with another team because in his last year, you're the stat guy right now. You can even bring that up. Like, I don't think he was that awful in his last year with Dallas. He was obviously looking for, you know, a big time deal, and then I think he was reportedly going to sign with the Ravens, but it was only like a one year deal, and he wanted more money. And then obviously, like, nobody was willing to pay him the amount of money that he was hoping for. And then he obviously held out. But and then last year, I think he signed with like the Saints on their practice squad, I believe, as well. But yeah, I hope
tore his Achilles.
He did. Too. Yeah, it was like first day he was back or first day of practice or whatever. But I hope he does well.
Yeah,
I don't mind Dez Bryant.
I mean, his final year, he had 838 yards. So, you know, it's there. I mean, hell, I would like to sign a receiver down in New England right now who had 838 yards the last season he played.
Mm-hmm.
So you between those two, though, you'd say Antonio Brown over Dez Bryant. I mean, what if Antonio Brown, his last time he played, though, he only lasted 1 week.
That, you know what, you bring up a good point. I mean, no, I think he'll, you. I mean, we haven't heard anything on social media from him for, what has it been, at least 7 months?
Yeah.
Now, so.
I don't know what was going on during that stretch, but that was interesting, and I'll leave it at that. I guess last thing here on the Bucs, like, you noted this, like, this is a lot of star power.
Got to keep everybody happy.
And I mean, we kind of saw the hype last year in Cleveland over the star power they brought in. And that was a cruise ship disaster.
The difference here is Tom Brady, though.
I would agree. The difference, I mean, culture, which Tom Brady brings, the winning culture, the focus.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, where do you think the Bucs finish this year?
Man, they're...
They look...
Well, they destroyed my Packers team. So, yeah. I mean, that was obviously a punch to the gut, but...
But then it's just crazy the flip side. Then you go back to when they played the Bears earlier.
And lost, yeah.
Like, what is that?
Where they look awful.
Yeah.
I think the Bucs will be, I mean, I see them winning their division. I see them being a top three seed in the NFC. And then playoff time, anything can really happen. I think with the leadership from Tom, like how old is this guy? Is he 43, 42, however old? He doesn't look that old at all. He looks like he's 35 right now.
Yeah.
And I know like their offensive line's doing a lot for him right now, but even just watching against the Packers 2 weeks ago, like he was sliding in around the pocket, throwing like dimes to Gronkowski for touchdowns. And it's like, he's still got it.
Still got it. I think it was 5 touchdowns last game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still got it. All right. Let's jump to the picks here. I'll just bite the bullet early. I jumped out to an early lead this year. That early lead is, in the words of T.I., dead and gone. You're up. You're 64 and 42. I'm 57 and 49. I'm sliding. I mean, I had a terrible week last week. What did I go? Hey, I think you sent it
to 4 me. And 10. Oh, I wasn't much. I was 6 and 8 last week. But
I was, yeah. All right. So, I mean, you're ahead right now. I'll let you go first here. We got Carolina favored by 3 against Atlanta. And by the way, shout out to Atlanta a little bit.
Finding ways to lose.
Yeah, again. Unbelievable. Did you watch the ending to that game?
I did.
That was...
What was funny is yesterday it was tweeted out, like literally Matt Ryan was saying to Todd Gurley, do not score here. Do not score. All you have to do is just... He didn't... Like, he could have kneeled.
Yep.
And like, you kick... Time runs down, you kick the field goal. It was a chip shot. It was like a 15-yard field goal. They would have won. But Matt Stafford goes down the field. Lions win.
Just tough. Tough, tough, tough.
But, yeah, we got Carolina at Atlanta. Carolina's a 3-point favorite. I'm going Panthers. I just don't trust anything with what the Falcons have got going on this year.
I'm going to go Yeah, I'm going with Panthers. I mean, they're home. I'm going with Panthers as well.
All right, we got Indianapolis at Detroit. Indy's a 3-point favorite. I think they were off last week. I'm going to go Colts here.
I'm going Detroit, actually. Yeah. Some signs of life last week. Matt Patricia, help me gain a game there. Help me.
Hey, he's winning games now. We talked at the, a couple weeks ago. He was on the hot seat hard.
He was.
And they're 500. They're 3-3.
Yeah.
All right. We got Minnesota at Green Bay. Green Bay is a 6.5-point favorite.
Packers.
Yeah. Vikings are 1-5. So
I'll let you pick first this one. I think you know who I'm going to pick. This is the first time in a while I've seen this. The Bills, 3.5-point favorite, hosting the Patriots. You're picking right now to decide if you think the Patriots are done this year or not.
I really struggled with this one because I don't think Buffalo is playing well right now. I think they had, was it like 6 field goals last weekend against, or maybe they scored 1 touchdown, but against a Jets team who is, we won't even go there, how bad they are. But I really struggle with this one, but I do think Buffalo is going to come ahead. I'm picking Buffalo, but I do think it's going to be a very close game, and I think the Pats will be, like, they will be ready for this one. But I do think Buffalo is going to go out on top with this one. I think it's going to be a very close game, though.
I think if the Patriots have a good first quarter, they're going to cruise to a victory here. I think if it's a bad first quarter.
Yeah, because Buffalo's defense hasn't been looking as good as years past, too.
What I'm hoping for is this is like early in the year when the Patriots played the Raiders and got everything, and we're all like, we're back. And now we're back to where we are right now.
So you're going Pats?
I'm going Pats.
All right.
I have to.
All right. We got Tennessee at Cincinnati. Kind of surprising. It's only a 6-point. Tennessee's favored by 6, but I'm going to go Titans.
Same.
We got, let's see, Vegas at Cleveland. Odell Beckham done for the year, tore his ACL. Cleveland's still a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to go Vegas here.
Same.
In the upset.
Same.
Then we have the biggest spread of the year so far. We have the Jets at the at Kansas City, 19.5-point favorite. The Chiefs are. The Jets played the Bills tough, close last week. I'm gonna say the Jets keep it under 20, but I'm not very confident in that.
So you took the Jets.
I took the Jets.
This is the first time someone has taken the Jets all year, and it took.
It's 20 points.
I know, and I'm going Kansas City. Like I can't. I'm going Kansas City.
Okay. We got the Rams at Miami. Rams who look really good.
Hold on. Back to the last game. Adam Gase is still the coach, right?
He is.
I'm going Kansas City, and I'm going to say with more confidence now, Kansas City.
All right, we got Rams at Miami. Doherty talked about it. Tua is going to be the new starter for the Dolphins. Rams, who looked really good on Monday night against the Bears. The Bears were not in that game basically from the start. I'm going to go Rams here. 4-point favorite.
Yeah, I'm going Rams as well.
All right, we got kind of an intriguing game here. We have the Saints at Chicago. Saints are 2.5-point favorites. Surprisingly stat, this is the first time all year Drew Brees has been outside.
Wow.
So it's in Chicago. I'm sure the weather's going to be in the 30s. It's going to be a little colder. I'm still going to go Saints here, but I think it's going to be a close one.
I'm going to actually, you know what? I haven't been a believer, and after last week, I probably shouldn't be a believer, but I'm going to go with Chicago on this one.
Okay.
I think they have found ways to win this year, and I think... They're back at home. I think they can get it done.
Yeah, that's not a bad pick. All right, San Francisco at Seattle. Seattle obviously coming off a interesting loss last Sunday night against the Cardinals. That was by far, in my opinion, the game of the year so far. I'm gonna go upset here. Seattle's actually favored by 3. I'm gonna go San Francisco. They've been playing kind of off to a rocky start. We were ripping on their quarterback play a couple episodes ago, but I think San Francisco's got to figure it out, and they're starting to finally look like the team they were last year. I'm going to go San Francisco here.
I'm going with Seattle, and I'll be honest, I'm actually going with the favorites the rest of the way down here. Okay. Philadelphia, Chargers, Baltimore. I'm a little nervous about that Philadelphia pick because they're getting spotted 7.5 against Dallas, but I mean, well, what's the Dallas quarterback situation for this week? DiNucci?
I don't even know. I think they were trying to bring somebody in, but they wouldn't clear COVID protocol and stuff. Like,
yeah, I don't see things getting better in Dallas this year.
That was an awful hit too, by the way. That was
terrible.
Stupid.
Yeah, granted, Dallas is still right in the playoff mix in their division, yeah. But I just do not see them. I have a hard time seeing them win right now.
Yeah, I'm going Philly, Chargers, and then Pittsburgh's not getting enough credit this year. They're the only undefeated team. I'm going to go Pittsburgh against in the upset over Baltimore.
Well, we got a couple differences this week, so hopefully I can hack away into the lead a little bit, or maybe I'll start to follow further and further behind. But I think this was the first week where
we got one more.
Oh yeah! Wow.
Tampa Bay. Well, I mean, not really, but
yeah. Is anyone picking the Giants right now?
Tampa Bay, yeah. Giant Bucks are 10.5 point favorites. I'm going Bucks.
I'm going Bucks too. I'm not. Yeah. Well, I guess we do have to give them credit. I mean, you picked the Jets this week, so maybe someone will pick the Giants at some point. But yeah, your face is it all right now. Not happening.
No.
All right, that's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, leave us a review, hit us up on all our social media platforms, and tune in next week.
Jack and Jill Show is hosted weekly by Greg Gilmore, that's me, and Mike Lennon. The show is crudely edited by yours truly, me again, and produced by our sports information department, that's me and Mike. Our artwork is designed by Michaela Isid Williams. A special thanks to Northland College for letting us do this. Northland College is a small private liberal arts school located on the shores of Lake Superior. Come check us out online at northland.edu. This is a special place. Come see it for yourself in person. You won't be disappointed.